With the polls opening across this great country in mere hours, we at Two Jews and a Gay want to celebrate the diverse opinions in this country. To that end, we are hosting the first of what will hopefully be a series of debates. On the right will be friend of Spencer's and friend of the podcast, Aaron, and on the left, yours truly. Before this debate, hosted by Derek Green, begins, stay tuned for a promo for our much-anticipated 10th episode.
It started with a few simple words.
Well, I'm not sure how I can beat that introduction.
And has become a podcast downloaded by a few.
Because you haven't had sex since April.
Next week, the boys celebrate their 10th episode with a celebration. The 10th episode featuring Eric Katz, Nick West, Todd Yasmin, Mike Gilman, and more, including Spencer's recap visit to the doctor, the return of Jew or Gay, the top 10 podcast moments, and a huge announcement.
So on that note, please join us next week for our 10th episode.
All right, we're live. All right, welcome to the first inaugural Two Jews and a Gay podcast debate. I am your moderator, Derek, and tonight we are featuring two panelists taking either side of the political spectrum, with Brian on the left and Aaron on the right. So tonight we'll be reviewing three topics. Per question, per topic, each panelist will have 90 seconds to respond to why their candidate has the best agenda to address that concern. After the second person gives their 90-second platform, there will be a 30-second rebuttal from panelist one, followed by another 30-second rebuttal from second panelist. And we're just going to flip-flop after each question, and Aaron won the coin toss and deferred to Brian. So our first question is about the economy. The economy currently went through a tumultuous 4 years since the 2008 crash. However, increasing amounts of data suggests we're on track for continued GDP growth. Why is your guy the right choice to help continue the momentum and get us to strong GDP growth in the next 4 years?
Well, first of all, thank you, Derek, for hosting this and Aaron for agreeing to participate. My view is that President Obama took over an economy that was in shambles, that had been eviscerated by the kind of backwards policies of President Bush that Governor Romney wants to implement, but just on a much more massive scale. President Obama's plan is very measured and, in my view, very fair to the American people. What he's asking for is a balanced approach to both deficit reduction, which will help spur economic growth in the future, as well as economic growth through measured infrastructure investments. The idea of Governor Romney involves a massive tax cut, $5 trillion by every nonpartisan estimate, that the country can't afford. You can't simultaneously want to lower the deficit and yet give a $5 trillion tax cut to people who don't need a $5 trillion tax cut. My view is that President Obama's leadership in these times has been measured and has been responsible, and it has shown in 31 months of continual private sector job growth. And in fact, the only real area of the economy that's been exceptionally weak is in the public sector, and that's been due to the very draconian cuts that the Republican Congress
10 seconds.
Has forced upon the American people, lack of state aid, which has forced public sector employment to go down.
All right, Brian, that's your time?
Yes.
Okay, Aaron, you have your 90 seconds.
Well, thanks for having me on. Brian, appreciate your time with me today. Look, the fact of the matter is that under President Obama, the middle class has been buried. There is no doubt about it. The real unemployment rate stands at 14.9%. Poverty is at an all-time high at 46.2 million. One in six Americans are in poverty. 46 million Americans are on food stamps. 30.8 in 2008. This is a 50% increase in just 4 years under President Obama. 25% of all children are on food stamps. Since President Obama took office, $5 trillion of national debt has been added. This is more than the first 41 presidents combined. 53% of all college graduates are unemployed or underemployed. And gas has gone up about 100% since President Obama took office. So Brian's statement that the economy is chugging along here and seems to be on a great path is just false. President Obama has implemented policies, and mind you not, for the first 2 years of his administration, he had total control to do whatever he wanted in Congress. He spent those years passing a health care law that nobody wants and is burying the middle class even further.
10 seconds.
Instead of fixing the economy. Mitt Romney has a plan. He has a five-step plan to add 12 million jobs in his first term in office.
Okay, that's your time?
That's my time.
I just want to point out that the $12 million job claim that the Republicans put out there is the exact amount of jobs that will be created, according to all nonpartisan economists, that if you had nobody in the White House whatsoever. $12 million jobs is the number that the economy will grow naturally over the course of 4 years. So the idea that Romney is some sort of economic savant who is just going to rescue us from the doldrums of the economy now just doesn't hold water. The idea
time,
that
time,
Brian, that's just false.
It is not false.
Well, this is my time for a second here. That is false. Last month, job creation was slower than the month before, and that month was slower than the month before that. Job creation is slowing down. It's not even keeping pace with the natural growth of our population. There are no jobs being added by President Obama, and it's not going to change under a second term. It's going to be status quo. Jobs are going down. The economy is not getting better. We're stuck in neutral, and it's under President Obama's leadership that he has failed to lead this country into a positive job growth.
Okay, I'm just going to open it up a little bit right now. You guys go free ahead for the next minute.
The idea right now that we are worse off now than we were in 2008 is just ridiculous on its face. The country was losing 900,000 jobs a month under President Bush. And the only way that you get to the zero net job growth number is if you include the first 3 or 4 months of 2009, where President Obama first took office, and before he actually was even able to pass a stimulus plan. So how you could conceivably blame Obama for economic policies that were implemented by the previous administration is completely beyond me.
Okay, Aaron, you had the last word.
Yeah, I'm not blaming President Obama for the mess that we were facing in 2008 and 2009. I'm blaming President Obama for not implementing the correct policies to get us on a path to get out of that mess. He had the ability to do so in the first 2 years in office. Like I said, he had total control of Congress, and he didn't do it. He instead went forward with his health care plan. The fact of the matter is we were in a bad situation, and President Obama has done nothing to get us out of it. His $1 trillion stimulus package hasn't created a single job. We are losing jobs. We've lost jobs. He promised under 8%. If we pass the stimulus package, he promised that we'd be under 8% unemployment right now. Well, the fact of the matter is the real unemployment rate is 14.9%. So okay. That's just
false. I can't let that statement rest. We have not lost jobs under President Obama. We just haven't. There's been 31 months of positive job growth in the private sector over the last 31 months. And to say anything else is just denying reality.
So when President Obama took office, the unemployment rate was at 5.8%. Today, it's at 7.8%. You're telling me we haven't lost jobs?
What I'm saying is you can only get to that number where you have your net job loss total, which is a talking point that every Republican has been schooled on, and I applaud you for knowing the talking point. The only way that you can get to that number is if you include the job losses that were immediately after President Obama's inauguration. If you which no one can say were his policies that were being implemented. You have to look at the totality of his 4 years. And the idea that you have some plan from Mitt Romney that will grow the job market by 12 million jobs, that's unique to Mitt Romney's plan, when every nonpartisan economist says the country will add 12 million jobs in 4 years, regardless of who's in office, is to me, like, where's that he's underperforming? If he can only get 12 million jobs, then why are we looking to change? He should be shooting higher. Why not say 20 million jobs?
All right, Aaron, I'll give you the final word.
Yeah, I haven't seen any one of those estimates, and that's just incorrect. Like I said, last month's job creation was slower than the month before, and that month was slower than the month before that. Job creation is slowing down. The real unemployment rate is 14.9%. Millions of Americans have stopped looking. There's 23 million Americans unemployed right now. There's no question that President Obama has failed.
Okay, thanks, guys. All right, I'm sure that was very enlightening to a lot of our listeners out there. On to the next question, the next topic for tonight will be about social issues. You know, we all take different sides in the pressing arguments for in our social issues of today. So briefly speak to what your candidate's stance is on the role of the federal government on the following broad topics. I'm going to list out four topics here, and I want you guys to speak to one or two of the topics in your stance. We'll talk about healthcare, civil and LGBT rights, business regulation, energy regulation, and the last one would be education.
Brian? You want us to talk about two?
Yeah, two of the topics.
Aaron actually has first go this time, since I spoke last time.
That's correct.
Okay, well, you want me to address both topics in my 90 seconds?
Yes.
Okay, well, I guess you said healthcare, LGBT rights, business regulations, and what else?
Education.
Education, thank you, sorry. Okay, so I'll talk about healthcare, business regulation. I'll hit all four. President Obama came into office and pushed through Congress a health care law that nobody wants, nobody asked for. The majority of Americans are against still to this day. He got the 60th vote in the Senate by scaring Senator Bill Nelson of Nebraska with the AARP ads. He passed this healthcare law that nobody wants. Mitt Romney passed the healthcare law in Massachusetts, but it was a state-specific law. And the federal government is now forcing on 50 states what it wants. And nobody wants this law, and it's going to continue to bury the middle class and make it actually increase healthcare costs. Business regulations are necessary, and Mitt Romney obviously understands that certain regulations need to stay in place. You can't have a free, totally free market. It just doesn't work. You need certain regulations to contain various market pressures, but too many regulations actually buries business and prevents businesses from hiring from increasing their workforce. When you don't know what's going to happen in the next year, you're less likely to hire people. And that's what Dodd-Frank has done. They haven't even finished writing the regulations for Dodd-Frank. I work for a company, and we don't know how the healthcare law and Dodd-Frank are going to affect our profitability over the next 4 years. And if they're going to be implemented fully, then we're going to have to change some of our business practices and probably not hire as many people. It's just a fact that increase business costs and make things a lot more difficult for large businesses and small businesses alike. And employers aren't hiring because of that.
Okay, Aaron, I'm going to stop you there. You got 2 minutes there. Brian, I'll give you 2 minutes as well.
Well, the first idea that nobody wanted of President Obama's Obamacare is just false. He ran on this. He ran in 2008 on healthcare. He got elected on healthcare. And a little institution called the Heritage Foundation, a right-wing think tank, came up with Obamacare. This is if you would warp back into the 90s, this was the exact kind of plan that conservatives in Congress were trying to push when President Clinton was trying to push his much more liberal version of health care, which was also demonized, to no one's surprise, by Republicans. There's just a fundamental disagreement in this country between Republicans and Democrats about the right for universal health care. They feel that it is fine and dandy to have the free market decide everything. Well, guess what? In this world, the free market did. The mandate for healthcare is to buy private healthcare insurance, use the private market. And through the leveraging of pools of people who otherwise could not get insurance, they are going to be able to buy insurance for much lower rates than they could on the open market as it is now. It's a net positive for the country. It ensures that 35 million people who would otherwise not have insurance gets insurance. As far as economic regulation goes, I don't think anybody in this country would think that the reason we had the 2008 catastrophe that we did was because we were not regulated enough. The idea that business regulation is somehow this crushing influence on business, and that Mitt Romney is the person who will be able to put smart, consensus-driven based regulation in place is ridiculous. Dodd-Frank is a too tepid a response to the catastrophe that we had in 2008, in my opinion. I do also want to briefly talk on the gay rights issues and social issues in general. I think if you are looking for a candidate who is going to consistently defend the civil rights of gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgenders, then Mitt Romney is in no way, shape, or form your candidate, no matter which version of Mitt Romney you decide to vote for.
Okay, Aaron, your rebuttal?
Well, first on the last issue, Obama just became pro-gay marriage like 2 months ago, and he did that because this election was coming up. He's been against gay marriage his entire political career until about 2 months ago. You said that the healthcare law encourages private markets. That's actually false. What it does is encourage businesses to drop their employees from their healthcare plans because it makes more sense to pay a penalty. To pay the penalty, which is cheaper than the healthcare premiums for employees, and therefore employees are going to lose their healthcare coverage through their employer, and they're going to be on the government rolls. It's just a matter of time before we have a one-payer system.
Which I'm perfectly fine with.
I'm sure you are, but a one-payer system means there's no free market and there's no competition, so that just undercuts your entire argument. If there's no competition, no free market, and it's the government deciding rates, well, guess what? Doctors aren't going to make as much money. You're going to have fewer doctors, people going to medical school. You're going to have fewer nurses going to nursing school because they don't have the drive to go and become rich as doctors, which I hope doctors want that drive. I hope the brightest people want to go to medical school so that they can go and be very successful, because those are the kinds of people that I want operating on me. And when they don't have that incentive because the market isn't there, well, guess what? We're not going to get those kinds of people, and we're going to have a shortage. Just like in England, just like in Canada, you have to wait months to get MRIs and any sort of elective surgery or even emergency procedures. Sometimes you have to wait. And the healthcare law actually creates a health board, unelected individuals who are going to determine how to cut costs. So that might actually mean
20 seconds.
Seniors aren't going to get the kind of cost because the majority of costs are spent in the last few months of a person's life. And, well, maybe if this healthcare board decides that they're going to be spending too much money, they're going to say, well, we're going to let granny die. I don't like an unelected board making my healthcare decisions. I want the market to let me decide what doctors I can pick and what medical treatment.
Okay, that's time.
I must say I'm impressed by your use of the death panels. You didn't specifically call them that, but you certainly alluded to them. The idea that a analysis of what is the most effective treatment for particular diseases is somehow akin to killing grandma is one of the biggest talking points of the Republican Party and one of the most disgusting. This healthcare policy is a boon to private insurance companies. And that is part of my problem with it. I would have loved a single-payer system, but we didn't get that. There's no way in hell in this country right now that you would get to a single-payer system. But you know what is a single-payer system right now? Medicare. And you know who loves Medicare? People on Medicare. Medicare is far and away one of the most popular government programs ever created.
It's going broke.
Ever created. It's going broke because your party demagogues.
My party.
The.
Didn't Obama raid Medicare?
Don't even give me that. Paul Ryan's exact budget cuts it by the exact $716 billion.
Paul Ryan's not running for
it. Here's the thing. You say that, but Mitt Romney himself has said that he would gladly sign the budget, the Paul Ryan budget, that includes the $716 billion in Medicare cuts. And that $716 billion in Medicare cuts for Obama goes into the healthcare system. The $716 billion in Medicare cuts under Paul Ryan's budget goes to tax breaks for billionaires. So don't give me this apples to oranges comparison. The cuts are not the same, and any attempt to say so is just willfully misleading.
All right, I'm going to give you guys another 30 seconds, and then we're going to wrap it up, okay? Aaron, you have 30 seconds, and here we go.
Okay. Well, none of that was accurate. Mitt Romney has said that he's going to put in the $716 billion back into Medicare that Obama has raided to fund Obamacare. Medicare is going broke, and it's mostly because Obamacare. The health care law, a single-payer system is what will totally destroy the healthcare system that we know today, where you get to go and choose the doctor that you want and to have whatever you want done on you by whatever professional is best in the market. You're going to be told where you have to go and what procedures the doctors can perform by the government. I don't want the government that far deep in my life. I want to be able to decide what I want, what doctors I want to use.
Okay, that's time.
If you want a single-payer system, go to Canada.
The idea that American healthcare system is the best in the world is true if you have the money to pay for it. But a lot of people in this country do not have the money to pay for it. It is spectacular for people like myself who have a very nice healthcare plan for my company. But this country is founded on the idea that we help each other out when we can and when we must. And in the idea that we would allow in this country 30 million plus people to not be insured with healthcare is outrageous and un-American.
Okay, that's time. All right, thanks, gentlemen. I think we covered a lot of issues there on our social topic. Moving right along to our third topic of the night. This will be a worldview stance. The question is, what is the United States' geopolitical and economic role in the world today? How will your candidates' policies change the current status of our relations amongst our allies, as well as our foreign economic interests?
Well, I think while I would never suggest that we should agree to the opinions of the foreign countries, if you have seen latest polls, I think 25 out of 26 countries' leadership would like to see President Obama reelected, Pakistan being the only one. And the only reason Pakistan really doesn't like us right now is because President Obama has drone strikes flying through their airspace. And I honestly have no problem with that whatsoever. As far as the grander picture of where our role is geopolitically, I think we need to be much more humble in our foreign policy. We can't be all things to all countries, and we certainly don't need a $2 trillion increase in our military spending. We certainly don't need 3 more submarines, and the kinds of military spending that is unsustainable given the claims that the right has about wanting to cut the deficit. As far as our geopolitical economic role, I think, you know, we're still where all the action happens. China's a much bigger influence going forward, and we need to certainly measure ourselves against them in terms of any kind of trade infractions or currency manipulation that they're doing. But the idea that on day one, Romney's going to spark a trade war with China by declaring China a currency manipulator is ridiculous. That's one of the surest ways to generate a recession.
10 seconds.
I think President Obama's leadership in this world over the last 4 years has been virtually unimpeachable.
Okay. Aaron, your response.
Yeah, I mean, we can go through a whole host of issues, but let me first start that when the rest of the world tells me that they want this person to be my president, I'm going to automatically look to the next person in line because I don't want the world telling me who to vote for and who is best suited to represent me. So God bless America that we vote for people here and we don't listen to the rest of the world's opinion. So especially when Russia is telling us to vote for Obama because he's going to give them the missile shield out that they're looking for. It's not $2 trillion in military spending additional to what we have now. It's actually preventing cuts to military spending that is going on. Right now, we spend the lowest GDP percent to GDP than we did since World War II on our military. Percent to GDP, we have the lowest percent to our GDP than we did since World War II. We have the fewest amount of Navy ships since 1918. We have the fewest amount of airplanes since the Air Force was right after the Air Force was created. Our military is shrinking. We are coming from a tide of war over the last decade, so it is natural for our military to shrink. But $2 trillion in military spending being cut, not being added, but being cut by the Secretary of Defense under this administration has said that would be devastating to the military. He doesn't want it. Nobody seems to think that would be a good idea, but Obama seems to say that Romney wants to add $2 trillion. That's not true. He wants to prevent cuts. We are the world leader in economics, in business. This is where you come and do business, and right now, under the Obama administration, we are not the most competitive place to do business with a 35% corporate income corporate tax.
10 seconds.
We need to lower our corporate tax rate so that we can be competitive in the world again. China is a currency manipulator, and they need to be called out because they are causing a lot of the problems that Americans are suffering.
Okay, that's your time.
Now.
Brian, your rebuttal.
Well, I won't use the horses and bayonets argument, although I think that's apt. Anyone who looks at the Navy from 1916 and compares it to the Navy of 2012 just isn't looking at the same kind of threats that this country has and the same kind of technical abilities that this country has. Of course we have fewer ships because we have ships that can do more things. So to try to do an apples-to-apples comparison of those types of numbers is just ridiculous. Now, as far as our role in the world in general when it comes to military, I think we need to kind of be mindful of what President Obama said he was going to do when he first got into office. He said he was going to end the war in Iraq. He did. He says he was going to refocus in Afghanistan. He has. He said he was going to kill Osama bin Laden.
10 seconds.
He did. And we are a much better country, a much safer country because of that.
The world is actually a much more dangerous place because of a lot of the policies Obama has put into place. His foreign policy is unraveling before our eyes. The Middle East is a timber box. Syria is going up in flames. There's 30,000 people that have been killed there. Libya is an al-Qaeda hotbed with training camps in the north and west. Iran is 4 years closer to obtaining a nuclear bomb. His apology tour around the world hasn't done anything. Nobody likes us anymore. Nobody likes us any less. We're still America, the demon over in the West, and Obama's policies haven't done anything but made us weaker in the world because we don't show strength. No leadership under this president.
The idea that anybody could look at Obama and his foreign policy over the last 4 years and think that he is coming from a position of weakness has simply not... Maybe they've been in a coma the last 4 years. He has conducted more aerial drone strikes in Pakistan than Bush did in 8 years. He killed Osama bin Laden. And
he didn't kill Osama bin Laden. Navy SEALs killed
under
Osama
his
bin
orders. Now, you are so splitting hairs. By your logic, then, Mitt Romney, if he's president, isn't responsible for the 12 million jobs the country is, or the individual employers are, because they're the ones who actually hired it.
I'm pointing out the fact that he didn't actually go out there and kill the guy.
But it's a specious argument. Are you kidding me? Like, you're saying that because he didn't physically hop on the helicopter and hold the M16 rifle.
All right, let's stay on topic, guys.
That he's not responsible, or he doesn't deserve the credit for that? Are you kidding me?
No, I think he deserves the credit for giving one of the toughest orders ever given by
anybody. Absolutely,
any
but by your logic, he doesn't deserve any credit at all because he wasn't the person.
No, no. Did I say that? I didn't say that. I said that he didn't actually go and kill him. But he does deserve credit for killing bin Laden. He does deserve credit for killing a lot of bad guys. I applaud him for that. But he has been weak when it comes to standing up for the Iranian revolution
untrue.
By the students.
He has.
He didn't stand up.
Working with the foreign... with the diplomatic corps across the world, and by demonstrating the improved relations that we have with countries around the world, he was able to implement some of the strictest, most restrictive, most devastating economic sanctions in Iran ever. Ever.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Green Revolution. He didn't say one peep about it when the students in Iran were in the streets and trying to overthrow their government. He didn't do one... he hasn't done one thing in Syria. 30,000 people have died. He hasn't done one thing in Syria. And let's not forget that just 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, we had a terrorist attack on our consulate in Benghazi, and no help was provided when three times it was requested. No help was provided, and no security was provided after a prior attack on the same consulate. Something has gone wrong. Something has been misrepresented by this administration to the American people. And we're going to find out what it's about. It's probably going to be after this election.
I'll give you 20 seconds to respond.
I'm certain President Obama will conduct a full investigation once he's re-inaugurated.
Great.
In January 20th. What I fail to get from anybody on the right is what exactly do you propose to do in Syria? And how would you have actually encouraged the revolution in Iran? What would you propose to do? Do you want to send troops? Do you want to create a no-fly zone?
All right, let's wrap
what
it
is
up.
What's your solution?
When you stand up and as the President of the United States and support the movement and do so clandestinely with funds and manpower, whatever it takes to encourage an uprising like that was our one chance to overthrow the mullahs and to actually have a peace with Iran that we are not going to have. We're on the verge of war with Iran. In Syria, I think a fly zone makes sense. That he's slaughtering
We're going to end the debate right there.
I want to extend it for just a second. What's our national interest in Syria?
Okay, well, we are the world police.
Why are we the world
right
police?
Now, and okay, what was our national interest in going after Germany? We weren't attacked by Germany in World War II.
Well, you're kidding, right?
Well, what?
Because
we weren't attacked by Germany.
You don't know history, then. What happened was we were attacked by Japan. We declared war on Japan.
Right.
And then guess what? Germany, as an ally of Japan, declared war on us, and then we thus declared.
Yeah, but they didn't attack us.
And then we
declared
war on Germany. That's actually what happened in World War II.
Okay, but so,
Aaron,
are you referring to the national interest?
Are we going on to this debate?
Well, no, I'm not necessarily referring to appeasement. I'm simply saying that our national interest isn't just when our actual citizens are at stake or our money's at stake. We protect people. That's what we do as a great country. We're the only country in the world that can do it. Every country in the world is waiting for our leadership in Syria, and
well,
we're not
you're gonna,
leading.
You're,
no other country
going to
can
need
do
every
it.
Ounce
so we're
going to
let
two...
them. So if we know, if you know that there's a Holocaust going on, if he uses chemical weapons against his citizens, you're going to do nothing.
I'm going to say you.
It sounds like you are. It sounds like you're going to do nothing.
Every $2 trillion of that increased military spending, if he follows your foreign policy, which would get us involved in countries literally all over the world, because where do you draw the line? If Syria is something because there is a Holocaust or a genocide going on, then you also have to look at Africa. And then you also have to look at any...
That's right. We have troops in Africa. We have AFRICOM right now. We have troops in Sudan and Ethiopia.
Okay, guys, I'm going to have to wrap it up right there. We're going to wrap it up right there, okay? We're going to allow you guys 2 minutes each for closing arguments. You guys can talk about any of the 3 points we talked about or anything outside of that. Keep it on topic. Keep it about your candidate. And we'll give the first closing argument to Brian.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you, Aaron, for a lively debate. This election is about choice and the choice of where this country goes over the next 4 years. We have tremendous opportunity in this country, and I hate to see us squander that by by making the wrong choice. Choices such as a woman's right to choose, where will be directly impacted under a Romney administration, although it depends on which version of Mitt Romney you actually believe. This country cannot afford 4 years of Mitt Romney's reckless, intellectually dishonest, craven political opportunism that he has demonstrated over the course of this campaign. If you look at his severely conservative speeches during the presidential primaries, he is a completely different candidate than what he purports to be right now for the general election. And I can't afford to cast my vote for a candidate who is so willing to shapeshift into whatever positions and demographics the electorate demands of him. I want a candidate like President Obama who actually has a core and has a spine and can stand up and articulate his view of where the country should go and not articulate what the far right's view of the country should be, or the moderate view, or the liberal view, or the slightly conservative view. It kind of just depends on what group President or Governor Romney is speaking to.
15
seconds.
Thank
you very much. That's it.
Great. And your response?
Thank you, Derek, and thank you, Brian. And Brian, you're absolutely correct in saying that this election is about a choice. You have a choice about trickle-down government, more government, more spending, more debt, more trillion-dollar deficits for the next 8 years, bringing our total deficit to $22 trillion. That's the choice. You can have more government, more regulations, more closures of coal plants, electrical plants, increased costs for electricity, for water, for everything. You name it. Everything's going up. All groceries, all food, all prices of everything are going up. You can have more of the same under President Obama, and go ahead and vote for him if that's what you like. If you think things are going well, then 4 more years of President Obama, by all means. Things are not going well. The economy is stalled. We have 22 million Americans unemployed. That is just shameful. And President Obama's policies have done nothing but to further that along and actually accelerate the process. He hasn't turned it around. He hasn't turned his ship. He hasn't brought us under 8% like he promised within his first 4 years. We're still at 7.8% unemployed, and actually 14.5% is the true unemployment rate. President Obama has not offered one single new idea for his second term. No agenda. That's the thing that bothers me most about this election. All it is about attacking Mitt Romney, just like Brian just did. He has no agenda other than to attack Mitt Romney. I haven't heard one new policy proposal from President Obama.
15
so
seconds.
If you want more of the same, then vote for President Obama. Mitt Romney will bring in a new kind of leadership to this country that has been starving for leadership for the last 4 years, and he will turn this economy around in his first term. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. This was definitely a lively debate, and we thank you for your time and contribution. So hopefully we can have more of these in the future, and thanks for everyone who was listening. Definitely please be a part of the democratic process on Election Day. Go out and vote.
Thank you, Derek.
Thank you.
Good night.